Around the time of my arrival here at Old South, I became aware that they were working on a diversity statement as part of the open and affirming process. And I steeled myself thinking I would have to make sure it included disability, included me, but it already did. And I was relieved that there were already other people doing that work here, and I didn't have to do it. And that was the beginning of a feeling of inclusion, the extravagant welcome.
I've made a back-of-the-envelope calculation of that statement, and I should say that Jim, whose family is taking up the entire balcony practically, our senior minister emeritus, was senior minister at the time of this statement and drafted much of the wording. I've made a back-of-the-envelope calculation. The statement has now appeared on our worship bulletins in excess of some 1,000 times. So, Ruth, isn't that enough? Can we take it off now?
No. For a couple reasons. The statement has evolved since we first signed it in 1994. Old South has strengthened and improved it since then. As we learn, as we hear God's still speaking voice, our hearts are moved to open the door even wider. We've added references to equal marriage, gender expression, gender identity. This church of the open door keeps pushing the door open a little wider and a little wider, making us more accepting, more welcoming. God's always, always loved all of us equally. As humans, we're still evolving. So why keep printing it? It's good for visitors to witness a church that makes these claims of radical hospitality. It's still kind of unusual to go that far. And it's good for us. For Old South, it keeps us honest. It keeps reminding us of the goal of a Christian community, the wide welcome to all, to everybody, anybody. We reaffirm this commitment to an extravagant welcome.
Ruth, you use a phrase that is a very important phrase. The phrase is universal access. Can you talk about what that means?
Universal access or universal design is a concept that goes beyond the building codes in the Americans with Disabilities Act. It's a philosophy. There are seven principles, but basically it's a concept that the design that you're dealing with does not disadvantage or stigmatize any group of users. Everyone is using the main entrance with the same ease as anyone else. There are multiple users that are kept in line, parents with strollers, children, older people. Universal access is the way we happen to do communion in this church, because we don't go up to the chancel and kneel to get communion. Communion comes to us. It comes to all of us, not just persons with disabilities. And that's very powerful for us to do it with and in the same way as everyone.
So, what does Old South have still to do to bring universal access to these facilities?
Well, first, kind of a shout out, so to speak, in terms of the sound system, which was just recently updated. So none of us are disabled, if you will, by the coughing or the people using a stage whisper behind us. But we still have the chancels here and in the chapel and the stage in Mary Norton Hall. And not coincidentally, probably, these are locations from whence the leaders lead, but not everyone can get there. And perhaps true universal access would be having ASL interpreters every week, and we all learn to sign, and then advertising that level of commitment in the deaf community.
Too often our holy scriptures equate physical and mental disabilities with sin. The ancients assumed that if a person was lame or blind, they had done something to deserve it. As an example, in the book of Leviticus, in the 21st chapter, is this paragraph. The Lord spoke to Moses, saying, "Speak to Aaron and say, 'No one who has a blemish may approach the altar to offer the food of his God. No one who has a blemish shall draw near. Not anyone who is blind or lame, with a mutilated face or a limb too long, or one who has a broken foot or a broken hand, or a hunchback or a dwarf, or a man with a blemish in his eyes or an itching disease or scabs or crushed testicles. No one with a blemish shall come near to offer the Lord's offerings. He shall not approach the altar because he has a blemish, that he may not profane my sanctuaries.'" Ruth, you and Jesus see it a bit differently. Can you talk about that?
So these are the rules for who can be priests, who can approach the chancel. Yeah, it's painful to be called out like that. It says dwarf, but not in a good way. There are stories in the Bible that teach that God is not equally approachable or accessible by or to persons with disabilities. Many stories in the Bible in which disability, illness, or infirmity is the cause of personal sin, their own, or even their parents' sin. The Scriptures and the Church, using the Scriptures, seems to be the other main alienating point for persons with disabilities. You have physical inaccessibility, and then you have spiritual inaccessibility. But there are other stories in the Bible that go a different way. In 2 Samuel, we have Mephibosheth, the son of Jonathan, who was a prince, who had been a good friend of King David. Jonathan was murdered when Mephibosheth was a kid. Alas, at the same time, when Mephibosheth lost the use of his legs in a childhood accident, he had been shut in. When he's an adult, King David calls for him. He thinks he's going to be killed. And David said, "Don't be afraid, for I will surely show you kindness for the sake of your father. I will restore to you all the land that belonged to your grandfather, and you will always eat at my table." Some disability theologians have pointed to this concept as restoring someone to their place in the community. No one cured Mephibosheth medically. They restored his identity as a male landowner, someone who eats at the king's table, restored his dignity. He was no longer scorned or pitied. We acknowledge generally that the Bible includes many varied stories, sometimes seemingly contradictory. When I was a kid, we sang a song about Zacchaeus in our junior choir. I thought that was pretty cool. Jesus dines with the short guy thing. I was ignoring the evil tax man part. My chair-using friend Carol loves the reference in Ezekiel, "Wherever the spirit would go, they would go, and the wheels would rise along with them, because the spirit of the living creatures was in the wheels." Don't we each have our favorite biblical stories? Stories that speak to us, especially personally.
The Reverend Harold Wilkie is a United Church of Christ saint. Some of you here, how many here knew Harold Wilkie? All the UCC ministers in the place and others. Harold Wilkie was amazing. He was an author, social activist, arrested in the civil rights marches in the 1960s, one of the first Americans with a severe disability to serve as a parish minister. Reverend Wilkie was born without arms. He encountered discrimination at an early age. He was barred from his local elementary school, and he had to walk several miles every day to get to another school that would welcome him. In college, he encountered a similar treatment from administrators who who thought that a man who ate with a fork between his toes did not belong where others could see him. Wilkie ate in the kitchen of the campus dining room until so many of his friends joined him in the kitchen that the administrators finally relented and let him stay in the main dining room. Wilkie earned degrees from Eden Theological Seminary, Union Theological Seminary, Harvard University, and the University of Chicago. Ruth, you have more to say about Reverend Wilkie.
His work in disability rights focused in recent decades on making places of worship accessible to people with disabilities. Before then, persons with disabilities were considered sick people who never got well. This is known as the medical model of disability. The model fits neatly into the historical church as well in terms of the need to fix or cure what is considered broken. And charities take care of people with disabilities when it can't be cured. Anyway, Reverend Wilkie disagreed with this medical model and said, "We are oppressed people who have been denied our civil rights." And his role in the disability movement was recognized with his participation in the White House ceremony for the signing of the Americans with Disabilities Act in 1990. And the ADA brought much greater access to people with disabilities in the private sector and also in the government sector. The picture that one sees most often about the signing of the ADA features these four old white guys in it and one woman, and he's the guy standing up. He delivered the invocation at the signing of the ADA, which is believed perhaps to have been like the first or perhaps the only time that occurred when at a White House signing ceremony. And so Reverend Wilkie and the ADA respond to the social model of disability that says that environmental barriers need to be fixed. And with a few supports like healthcare and dignity, including healthcare, people with disabilities can have dignity and independence. Although the church hierarchy discouraged him from seeking ordination, he was ordained in 1939 after demonstrating that he could perform the rites of the church like anybody else, and wrote a seminal book, Creating the Caring Congregation, and was a founder of the UCC Disability Ministries, of which our own David Clark was a board member.
So you're up in the big pulpit. Any last words for us?
There seem to have been several interwoven themes of why people with disabilities have felt alienated from the church, the physical inaccessibility and the spiritual inaccessibility, where people with disabilities are considered the other objects of sin, people to be pitied, cured, fixed, objects of charity. You pick which one. We need to be at the table, integrated with dignity. All of us here need healing or blessing sometimes. We are interdependent. At Old South, this concept is built into the fabric of the church. We offer healing services, peer support groups, meals, cards, prayer shawls, when each of us has a need. We're here together, all of us, worshiping a God who is of every gender, every race, every body.
In a minute, we're going to sing an oldie and a goodie, Blessed Assurance. Fanny Crosby wrote it when she was blind. And I especially love the line, "Visions of rapture burst on my sight." And Ruth, a little bird told me that this old hymn makes you cry. Can you say why?
Well, frankly, there's a lot of hymns that do that to me. But it's visceral. It makes me feel embraced, bathed in God's love. When I sing it, I can't help but hear Tennessee Ernie Ford singing, which is good because I can't sing. But this is the way I first heard it on my parents' stereo. And it's familiar and comforting, but here there are a couple hundred of us singing it together, but each of us will, in unison, each of us will be singing it in the first person. Jesus is mine. This is my story. This is my song. Each of us brings our story, our life, our experiences, our hurts and delights into our relationship with God. We each claim this is my God, our God. She, he, able, disabled, claims each of us.